From the Rose Garden is brought to you by GameTime, your new go-to app for the best deals on last-minute tickets. Did you know that Portland Trailblazers ticket prices tend to drop right before the game starts? GameTime tracks prices in real time from thousands of trusted sellers, then shows you all the best last-minute deals with prices that go all the way up to 60% off. More than 12 million fans have downloaded the GameTime app and discovered the fastest, easiest way to get into the game. Find tickets across all major leagues and every team. Exploring the app is very simple. It's quick and easy to navigate, and you can tap out, or you can check out in just two taps. You can also tap out too, I guess. So head to the App Store or the Play Store now to download Game Time and score awesome deals on last minute tickets. And welcome to From the Rose Garden. I'm your host, Dave DeFort, joined as always by my man, Jason Quick, the Athletics beat writer for the Portland Trailblazers. Today, we got a special guest, my partner in crime over on Nerder She Wrote, and the host of Brody and the Beard, and a recurring guest on the Athletics LA Clippers podcast, Mr. Podcast himself, Mo DeKeel. Mo, long time no speak.
Yes, it seems like it's been too long, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason, how about that game last night? Oh, that was rough.
Yeah, you know, and I think the worst part of it is Portland's Blazer fans' worst fears are being realized with Hassan Whiteside. You know, when he came in a trade, everyone heard about, well, he can be kind of lackluster in his effort. He has hollow stats. He doesn't care. And boy, for the first half, that was on full display. And it's been like that for large portions of this season so far. He did rebound and have a better second half, but this has not been, I think, what Blazer fans want to see. They want to see something more consistent, more effort. And I think it goes beyond the effort. To me, it doesn't look like he can jump very well. I mean, he gets the ball in good position down low, and he's getting swatted. He's getting it knocked away. Part of that's because he has the ball so low, but it just doesn't look like he has a lot of spring and energy around the hoop, and that's going to be concerning. The Nurkic injury and his return, that looks an awful long ways away right now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was one of the things when we did our little season preview for this show that we talked about. Like, he was the key to bridging the gap between the start of the season and whenever Nurkic came back, and he needed to bring energy. You know, it's funny. He almost seems like one of those tall for no reason type of guys. He dunked and just looked bored doing it. And Mo, listen, we could probably just do a whole show where we blasted Whiteside for his effort.
I mean, it is what it is with him. This is something we've known since his Miami days. The Miami Heat fans definitely know it, and I know for a fact because I tweeted something to the effect of, in the first half, he had like five or six offensive rebounds, but only 2 points to kind of show for it, just because he wasn't able to score off of those offensive rebounds. And to Jason's point, like, on one possession got blocked 2 or 3 times just on trying to put the ball back in. And I had a number of Heat fans kind of quote tweeting me going, like, been there before. We've seen this before. This is normal. This is welcome to the Hassan Whiteside experience. So this is kind of what you expect. And then on the other end of the court too, Zubac really gave it to him in the first half. You know, was a beast, you know, looked like a beast thanks to Whiteside. So this is something that we've seen with Whiteside. If you were familiar with him, you kind of understand that, like, you're getting to the point now, you understand, like, he's kind of out there, and almost sometimes his numbers don't really reflect what he's doing on the court.
Yeah. Well, it's an example of why you actually have to watch. You can't just look at the box score. Yeah.
There are two things from last night, though, regarding Whiteside that I think we should point out. One, in the first half, there was a play where Dame threw a lob to Whiteside, and he didn't dive, and he wasn't even there. And Dame was visibly upset. And Dame never shows up a teammate like that. But Dame was pissed. He was hot. And then, now, I wasn't at the game, but in reading and listening to interviews afterwards, Lillard said that at halftime, at least two players kind of got into Whiteside and said, look, we need you to dive harder. We need you to play harder. And it looked to have an effect. Obviously, at this level, you hope that a guy doesn't need players to, you know, kind of get in his face and challenge him. But this is going to be kind of the next evolution of this story. What does Whiteside do? And how does he react to kind of this fallback now where people are realizing, wow, maybe your stats are a little hollow. How about you play a little harder? And it sounds like the players challenged him a little bit. And I'm going to be real curious to see how he responds to this. Does he curl up and get defensive and kind of go into his own world? Or does he start playing a little pissed off and start playing with a little bit more energy? So, you know, starting tonight against Brooklyn here at home, I think that'll be real interesting to watch. Now, DeAndre Jordan, just a little bit ago, was declared out for the game. So probably he'll get a big dose of Jared Allen. But I want to see a little fire from Whiteside tonight.
I mean, listen, for this to happen 8 games into the season, is pretty inexcusable. I mean, I can understand if it's, you know, mid-January and, you know, you're just feeling like you're in a funk because it's the midst of the season. And I guess I can understand. But 8 games.
Yeah.
On a new team with a contract year. In a contract year.
But I mean, this is the kind of stuff like when Portland got him, I was like, oh, wow, this might not be a great fit. And, you know, we kept hearing over and over again, him and Dame are really good friends. This is going to, you know, Dame's going to keep him in line. I mean, for it to happen this early, it does make me worry, you know, how long is this going to last? I mean, he might play his butt off tonight. But, you know, like at some point, this is who he is. He's going to revert back to who he is. And they're going to have to, players are going to have to get into him again. And hopefully that would get the same result as he showed in the second half. But when you have to keep doing that to motivate a player, it wears on you. And, you know, this has also been this is going to be the biggest test of Dame's leadership. If they are indeed as close as they are, you know, you will think Dame's going to be the guy that's able to bring him in. And I think Dame's the best leader in the NBA. But this is a real challenge here. This isn't an easy one. And this is why, you know, ever since they signed him to a $100 million contract, the Miami Heat was always looking to move him. You know, and there weren't any takers till it was an expiring deal. So, you know, there's a reason why a guy who could put up pretty big numbers was available. I mean, like, I don't know if people really asked themselves that much. You know, really kind of question to themselves, like, well, why are they willing to give up on it? You know, they're a team that's looking to, they might be trying to make a run in the East. Like, that would be a guy you'd think they'd want, but they knew, like, this is an issue. And this is something they were tired of dealing with. And now the Blazers have to figure out how to deal with it.
Again, you look at the box score and you see 17 and 19. And traditionally you would think, oh, wow, he had a really good game. But I mean, the effort is not there. And it makes everyone else's job harder. Like
now,
Dame and CJ.
Wait, Dave.
Yeah.
He was good in the second half.
He was. No, he was. But
and
I mean,
he'll bring them back.
Right. But we have to look at the whole game. Right. Yes. Like, I mean, the effort wasn't there in the first half. And you know, they lose this game.
It's not like that was a totally hollow 17 and 19.
Absolutely. But they lose this game. Like, maybe they win this game if he shows up for the first half of this game.
No doubt.
And you know, already Dame and CJ have a huge load on their shoulders. Anthony Simons is helping them quite a bit in this game, had 17 points off the bench, but they have to have other help, right? Like, they need Whiteside. He's going to play, you know, 24 to 28 minutes a game. They need production out of him, especially because they both pull the defense so far away from the basket. He should have space to operate. And he just isn't giving them what they need. He's still not making contact on screens. And I think Dame and CJ looked tired down the stretch. A lot of it was because of how hard they were having to work for their stuff early on.
Look, this isn't just a Hassan Whiteside problem for the Blazers.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's a big part of it, but look, CJ hasn't shot well. He's shooting 34% from three, 40% overall. Anthony Tolliver has been non-existent since he's moved into the starter's role in place of Zach Collins. Mario Hezonja has been very inconsistent. I think he was 1 for 9 last night. And Hood, who was having a great year, has been a no-show the last 2 games. So it's really hard, I think, for Terry Stotts to get any kind of rhyme or reason to his rotation, because guys just aren't giving it to him every night. And then another thing is they're terribly imbalanced. They're all their talent is like in the backcourt. And you saw with Simons, he plays 26 minutes last night, but you have to get those minutes from someone. So Kent Bazemore, who's probably their best defender, only plays 13 minutes. And defense is a huge issue for this team. And they have all this talent in the backcourt. In the front court, they're so thin. And they're really exposed right now. And they just need some of those bigs, Tolliver, Hezonja, Whiteside, to be better.
Blowing that game against the Warriors, that is essentially a G League team, is going to come back to haunt them. You know, this was a winnable game against the Clippers, but the Clippers are, you know, one of a handful of the best teams in the league. It's a game that at best is a toss up, a 50-50, yeah, especially going into LA. You're not favored, but losing to the Warriors the other night, just inexcusable, honestly. Like, you have to pick up those wins. You're not good enough to beat the Clippers of the world every night. So you got to beat the teams that are awful. Mo, what did you see in the fourth quarter? What were the Clippers doing that were bothering Dame and CJ so much?
Well, I mean, I appreciate you setting me up here, Dave, but you had tweeted out that Kawhi was.
We'll get to Kawhi.
No, but we're going to get to it now. We're going to get to it now, because when you talk about the fourth quarter, you have to talk about Kawhi Leonard. I mean, he put up 18-6 after struggling all game, and you weren't the only one to tweet out, but you're my favorite person to make fun of, so I'm going to do it to you. But, you know, a lot of people were tweeting out like, oh, Kawhi's just taking this game off. He's taking three quarters off and things like that. And he struggled. He was not good. He didn't shoot the ball well. It just, you know, it looked like that. But when you tweeted that out, I just kind of felt it. You kind of felt it in the arena, too, that, like, Kawhi's coming in the fourth quarter. And I just said, just wait till the fourth quarter, because he's going to flip a switch. And he showed that he could do that. He leads the league in fourth quarter scoring. Last night was a great example of it with the 18 points, but I think he averages around 11 to 12 in fourth quarter points, and that was a big reason why. So, you know, they took advantage of the fact that with Whiteside on the court, you know, the Blazers were in drop coverage, which allowed for, you know, Kawhi to come off picks. And, you know, he's team captain of the mid-range shot. You know, he came and pulled up and right there just constantly had the mid-range shot and was able to knock those down. Defensively, they really got into the Blazers. You know, you talked about, you know, CJ and Dame getting tired down the stretch. I mean, when you have Patrick Beverley draping all over you all night, like, it wears you down, and eventually it gets to you. And that's kind of what happened to Dame. There was a good sequence where Bev was on him, guarding Dame up top of the three-point line. You know, Dame's doing his thing, shoots, misses a three. The Blazers get an offensive rebound, which you're like, okay, this is a good opportunity to score. Beverly's, you know, ball gets back to Dame. Beverly's on him still. Kind of jabs at a reach, doesn't get it, but kind of throws Dame's timing off. And then Dame goes to attack, and Beverly comes from behind and gets the block. So, you know, the thing about the Clippers is they're always going to keep coming. I mean, we joke that Kawhi is the Terminator. I mean, and the one thing we've seen from every Terminator movie, I haven't seen the new one yet, but, you know, I can guess one thing's constant. Terminator just keeps coming. Doesn't stop.
Yeah. He was individually plus 12. He played all 12 minutes of the fourth quarter, and the team was plus 12 in the quarter. Right? They were down six coming into the fourth. And that's just, this is back to Jason's point. Needing that offensive production out of Simons kept Kent Bazemore out of the game when they really needed him the most.
Right, and that's also where you would hope Whiteside shot blocking would appear, right? You kind of wanted to pick up higher. You want him to kind of be able to be that big man that can at least meet Kawhi at the top of the key at the very least and allow and stay with Kawhi, and then when he gets to the rim, be able to meet him there. You know,
that's totally against the Blazers' defensive principles.
Absolutely.
And Terry Stotts is so stubborn in this, but he insists on playing the same way all the time, which is to drop the big and invite the guys to shoot the mid-range shot. They'd rather have that than a three or a lay-in. So,
and it works against most of the league.
Yeah.
And it will. But you know what's funny too, though, Jason? It's like, that's the exact opposite. Like, I laugh when teams play drop coverage against Dame.
Right.
Because, you know, Dame's just going to come and pull up from three and knock those shots down. And there was, you know, so it's just sort of a funny thing. Like, you would think seeing it on your end, you know, and you also have CJ, who's also a huge mid-range guy who takes advantage of drop coverages that way. But it's just funny to see that, seeing how it hurts teams on your when you're on offense. Right. And not recognizing that it's actually hurting you defensively is a bit of a problem, and shocking that coaches get stubborn.
I mean, in a potential playoff series against the Clippers, they'll have to make an adjustment, because Kawhi, Lou Williams, Paul George is not bad in the mid-range himself. I mean, that's all, they're going to get a lot of scoring on these open looks. And, I mean, I don't know if they've got the personnel, honestly. Like, what's the answer, Jason? Like, if Whiteside can't bring it like he did in the second half, if he can't do that for the full 24 to 28 minutes that he's out there, what are their options while they're waiting for Nurkic to get back?
Yeah, my answer was going to be wait for Nurkic.
Yeah, right. I mean, is it Scal? Is Scal Labissiere? Like, is that?
I think we've seen, I mean, Scal has promised, but it's been obvious that he is still so green. I mean, the fouls he gets, the offensive rebounds he allows, he's just kind of just a hair off on timing and his strength. So Scal has promise, but you quickly realize why he's been kind of an end of the bench guy up until this point. But the thing that really jumped out at me during that game was, man, how much the Blazers missed Nurk on both ends, but particularly defensive. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone kind of knows that Nurk is a gifted offensive player with his points, rebounds, and assists. But to the Blazer fans, they realize just how important he is defensively. He's a very, very good defender. Not only protecting the rim, but he's smart and he's agile. And it really jumped out to me last night of how much they're missing him as a presence inside, and how big he was for this team to build, you know, or to get the three seed the last 2 years. In the West was largely centered around the skills of him, both offensively and defensively.
Well, and I think the Tolliver, you know, downgrading from Collins to Tolliver,
yeah,
has hurt them defensively as well. Because Collins has turned into a really solid backline help defender.
That was always his calling card, Dave.
Yeah,
since he was a rookie, they played him because he was really good defensively and really tough. And we saw, you know, the game that he got hurt against Dallas, he rescued in that game because Porzingis was killing him. And then Stotts in the second half put Collins on Porzingis and basically kind of stopped the flooding and allowed Portland to come back from a 19-point deficit and win. They don't win that game if they don't have Collins. So it's a tremendous, tremendous loss for them to not have Zach in the lineup.
Yeah. My big question, though, Jason and to Dave, is, can they hold on long enough for Nurkic to come, or do they have to start looking at moves December 15th when the contracts are able to be traded that were signed this summer? And with the way the West is, you know, and I actually talk about it with Brody and the Beard with the Rockets too, it's like you can't afford to get far behind. Like, I don't think we're going to see a team like the Rockets, who started out bad last year. And I'm sorry for talking too much of another team here on the Blazers podcast, but you know, they started out so bad last year, they were able to rise up. I don't know if a team could do that in the West this year with just how deep it is. It may not take as many wins as we think it will, but it's, you know, you got to stack wins. Losing to the Warriors, like Dave was talking about, is a real missed opportunity to bank a win, to put one in your vault that you should have had. And so can they hold on long enough? Like, what's the feel in that respect?
Yeah, I don't know. I think organizationally, I think they're willing to be patient. I think within the fan base, people are starting to panic a little bit, and they want to see them make a move. They have an open spot, an open roster spot. They're carrying 14 players right now. But I've been told that they are not going to look for a free agent signing to kind of stop the bleeding right now. But to your point, Mo, I mean, I think we'll probably know by December 1st. You know, after they go on the 6-game road trip before Thanksgiving, I think that's going to tell them a lot. And I think if they're in really bad shape, then they might be forced to go out and try to make something happen after December 15th when players who were moved in the offseason are eligible to be traded. You know, they have trade pieces, but boy, is anyone going to take Hassan Whiteside right now?
Well, he isn't expiring. So they'll have to package something to move him. You know, a lot of people have floated out the idea of Steven Adams, and actually that'd be fantastic. I think he would fit really well.
Have to give up somebody like a Simons or something.
And Simons is too valuable, right?
Absolutely. There's no way they're going to give up Simons.
I will say this.
I can't see them giving up Simons at all. I got to imagine he's pretty much untouchable at this point.
He's a star. The next three games are all, I mean, these are extremely winnable games. Of course, I said the same thing about Golden State, and look at how that turned out. But they've got Brooklyn at home. Brooklyn has not really been great. Atlanta at home. Trae Young has struggled a little bit, obviously, coming back from the ankle. And obviously, John Collins not in the game. And then Sacramento, that's been a tire fire. So, you know, this time next week, we may be saying, oh, okay, so they've righted the ship a little bit and figured things out. That six-game road trip, though, that they have coming up starting next Saturday in San Antonio, it's a little troubling because they could, in that road trip, I mean, it's San Antonio, Houston, New Orleans, who not winning a lot of games, but, you know, they're in it, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Chicago. Like, you know, if they go 3-3 on that road trip, that will feel like a failure.
Maybe. And look, we knew coming into this season that the beginning of the Blazers' schedule was going to be brutal. I mean, 13 of their first 18 are on the road. And look, two of these home games, you know, tonight it's coming on the back end of a back-to-back. Next week when they play Toronto, back end of a back-to-back. So it's not like this is a favorable part of the season for the Blazers. I mean, you look at Clippers, I'm looking at their schedule. God, they don't play again until Monday. It just seems, and they're all at home. Their back-to-back is both at home. We knew that Portland would struggle at this time. So I think you just need to be around 500 once you get out of that road trip, that six-game trip. If they're around 500, then I think they'll feel okay. This reminds me a lot last year of Utah. Remember, Utah just had a brutal early schedule, and they just kept saying, if we're around 500, we're going to be okay. And they were around there, and they ended up being okay. So a lot of times you just have to weather the really hard parts of your schedule, and they're easy to identify.
Yeah,
what parts of the schedule are tough. And the Portland, this is going to be one of their toughest parts of the entire season.
It's also going to take fewer games than most people realize to get into the playoffs in the West. The West is so brutal that teams are going to really beat each other up. I think you might get in with like 43-44 wins.
Yeah.
So,
and also,
you don't have to light the world on fire.
Also, let's take a step back. They were one shot away from beating Philadelphia. They had, what, a 6-point lead in the fourth quarter against at the Clippers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, the world isn't caving in. It looks, the 3-5 record is unsightly. It's not what people wanted. And you look at Collins being out, that can elicit some fear. But they've still been okay. Okay. They're not a dumpster fire. So I think it's important to keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, the Portland fans are starting to infect me a little bit. I'm getting nervous. I'm gonna blame Dan Morang for that.
It's just the kind of thing that happens to that. You just kind of look at the losses and you're just like, oh God, the losses are really piling up.
Right.
You know, but it's also like they're not getting blown out. It's not, you know, their point differentials just minus 1.5, which kind of just means it's literally a missed free throw here and there, and you have a different matters of wins. You know, you're 4-4 versus instead of 3-5 or whatnot. It's like you said, you know, those two games are pretty close. There's a lot of promise within this team. Like, I don't know if it's ready to just calm down, Portland fans. Like, I get it. Just chill out. It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. You're going to be fine. Just relax. It's okay, guys.
We are real close to, you know, if that Philly guy doesn't make the three at the end of the game, we're, you know, blowing up Anthony Simons for hitting the game-winning shot. If Kawhi doesn't go off in the fourth quarter, we're blowing up Anthony Simons for having a hot fourth quarter and carrying this team to victory. So, granted, neither of those things happened, but we're very, you know, it's razor-thin margin for error in the NBA. And I know coaches always kind of try to keep that in perspective, that it's not so much the result, it's how you're playing. And the Blazers are still doing some things right. It's just not very consistent from across the board, up and down the roster.
And yeah, I think we should blow up Simons now.
I was going to say, I'm blowing up Simons anyway. And listen, he's not a rookie, but he's getting my rookie of the year vote right now. We're going to go the Ben Simmons route with him.
Dave, didn't we talk about it on the last podcast?
We did.
God, we just want to see him play 30 minutes.
And look at what he did.
Yeah, I mean, he 26 last night. He was great.
Yeah, he I think has a real chance to do something, and it's going to create a lot of interesting conversations around the internet about CJ McCollum.
Yeah,
I think
right.
Which, you know, CJ is so good. So like, I'm not going to have that conversation, but I do think for a team that is going to be missing some pieces this year and feels like it should be able to compete, I do think this stuff is going to pop up.
I think that's their avenue to getting out of this, is using CJ as a trade piece. I know it's going to be, I don't think that will happen because for people who don't know, Neil Olshey has an incredible love affair with CJ McCollum, and I don't ever see him parting ways with him. And I don't know how much you mess with that chemistry between Dame and CJ, but if you're really talking about taking this team to the next level, Simons has proven he can step in and be the starter in place of CJ. And if you can get CJ and turn him into a Gallinari or LaMarcus Aldridge or some kind of stud four, then I think that's a decent avenue to explore. Now, I'm not saying that they're ready to do that or that they should do that, but I think if they get to that point, that's the avenue where they can get the most value.
Right, yeah. That's the trade chip that really gets you something great. Now, I think
he can't be traded, by the way, until close to the deadline.
But I don't think he's the guy. Like, I think to get Gallinari, I don't think it would take that much.
Yeah, no.
You know, but I think to get a big name guy, I think that's somebody you look at. The Simons thing, we talked about it a little bit with the Clipper game. This is the real challenge. You know, how do you do that and not lose Bazemore's defense?
You've got to find a way to make it work. And you know, this is the tricky part, right? Like they actually, for the first time, they have some depth in that position, right? They haven't had this luxury in a while. It's just been Dame and CJ. And now they've got Bazemore, they've got Rodney Hood, they've got Simons. I think the answer is to slide Hood in as the starting four and get Tolliver out of there. And you know, maybe you give up a little bit on of size on the defensive end, but Hood can hang with fours. I really think that for that extra shooting and you know, just having a guy who is a good athlete and all these other things that Hood can bring to that position, I think that doing that, keeping Bazemore on the floor is probably the best path going forward without Collins and without Nurkic.
I'm with you on that. And he has been playing Hood a lot at four this year. And that might be the answer in the starting lineup. I thought it was interesting. I think it was for the first time this year in the fourth quarter, he played Dame, CJ, and Anfernee together.
Yeah.
And Stotts, it's been weird. He's always been a coach who reacts to the other coach. And I think this is an instance where he could kind of force the hand of opponents by playing that three-guard lineup. Mm-hmm. Whereas Stotts is always like, oh, God, I'm worried about who I can guard. So he kind of dictates who he puts out on the court about on who he can guard. And sometimes I think you just got to throw that out the window and go, oh, yeah, we'll try to guard this line.
I've got a crazy one for you. How about Hood at the five, Bazemore at the four?
I knew you were going there. No,
you know, you know how I think, Mo. You know how I think.
I really knew it was Simon's hand.
Simons at the three. Yeah, let's go. Let's get weird with it.
As soon as Dave said, I know it's Portland.
Sounds like a Don Nelson lineup.
Yeah. I know it's Portland and let's get weird is a normal thing. But as soon as Dave said, I have a weird lineup, I was like, God dang it. He's going to do this. It's hard.
Mo and I talk too much. This is the problem. Like Mo knows ahead of time. I'm like, hang on. Maybe can Damian Lillard play center?
I mean, it's a podcast, so nobody could see me rolling my eyes as hard as soon as you say, hang on.
In all seriousness, though, I think they're going to have to find some way to carve more time for Simons because
absolutely,
it's just so obvious that this kid needs to be out there. And he does something that very few players in the NBA can do, and that's just create his own shot from anywhere, be it three-point, around the rim, in the key. And I think he's been surprisingly solid on defense. And
he's been good in pick and roll. I mean, he's doing stuff that I didn't realize he was going to be able to do this early.
Yeah. And I tell you, I love the kid. I mean, his demeanor is so cool. And there's just something about him. He always has the same expression. And he's been like that since day one as a rookie. He's never looked overmatched. He's never looked scared or any of that. He's just like, I can ball. And he's not cocky in any way, shape, or form at all. He just has an absolute coolness, an absolute confidence. And boy, I cannot wait to see this guy play more and see just how good he's going to become.
And he's got to play more. He's got
to. That's 3-point shooting. So 3-point shooting off the dribble like that is the most valuable guard skill. And he can do it. I mean, he's a 40% 3-point shooter on pretty good volume for the amount of minutes that he plays. They've got to find more minutes for him because he is lightning in a bottle.
And there's no other place he could develop that. Like that's the playing time is almost a key ingredient for young players to develop because you could do it in practice. You could do it in shoot around. You could do it in pregame workouts, but there's no replicating doing that against Patrick Beverley. Doing that against, you know, having Lou Williams on you, doing it against when Kawhi gets switched on to you or whatnot. There's no replicating that. You're not going that hard in practice. And it has nothing to do with these guys aren't working hard in practice. It's practice. You don't go full speed. You're not supposed to.
That's right. You don't even work on double teams.
Yeah.
All right. That's the Devin Booker callback.
it was funny, though. Last year, you know, it was mid-season. I would say around January or so. And the veterans were talking to me in the locker room and they're like, that kid should be playing right now. And they were talking about Anthony. They were pointing over to him. Evan Turner in particular, he's like, that kid has got it. He lights us up in practice. You know, so the vets knew early last season, you know, midway through the season that this kid has it. You know, I was still kind of skeptical. I was like, really? I don't know. I don't see this. He looks like he's 13, you know. But they knew, and it's certainly proven to be true.
Should have named this podcast after him. All right. That's it for today's show. Mo, thanks for coming on, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's always great to talk to Jason.
Of course it is. check out Mo over on our Rockets podcast and Clippers podcast. And of course, on Nerder, She Wrote, and the Daily Ding all the time. Look out for Jason. I'm sure he's got something big dropping this weekend. Don't forget to, you know, give us a good review and rating on iTunes. Subscribe. Go to The Athletic. If you're already a subscriber, you can actually subscribe to this show and get notifications every time there's a new episode. And if you're not a subscriber, what are you waiting on? Save 40% off by going to theathletic.com/from the Rose Garden. Very easy to remember. It's the name of the show. That's theathletic.com/from the Rose Garden for 40% off a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. And, you know, we'll be back next week with more From the Rose Garden.
Peace out.